This is Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your daily voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Hello, America, and welcome to Cleveland. It is Thursday, July 14, in the year of our Lord, 2016. I'm Ken Klukowski, guest hosting for Tony Perkins. We're here with Washington Watch, broadcasting all week live out of Cleveland on the shores of the Great Lakes as the Republican Party gathers together to nominate Donald Trump as President of the United States, and also his soon tomorrow morning to be revealed vice presidential pick, who I am sure also will be nominated by the full Republican National Convention to be his running mate as Donald Trump and this mystery VP, again, to be unveiled to all of us tomorrow, will go to war against Hillary Clinton and the Democrats for two very different visions of what America is all about and where they are going with it. I'm delighted to be with you this week. I do want to say at the outset as well, in light of the subject matter, it's important to know that neither Washington Watch nor American Family Radio nor any of our affiliates take any position or make any endorsements regarding President of the United States or any candidate for federal office. Any viewpoints expressed or endorsements made are in the personal capacity of the individual speaking and do not reflect the views of American Family Radio, Bot Radio, Washington Watch, or any other organization for that matter. Anywhere on earth, anywhere under the sun, or under heaven, as we would say. But it's a fantastic experience watching democracy unfold. This week we've been dealing with the Republican Party platform, the delegates who came here to debate and produce a document which will be the most conservative platform in modern history, quite possibly ever. I don't know how many cycles or years I have to go back to take a look. But the 2016 Republican Party platform, which will be formally adopted next Monday and presented to the party's soon-to-be nominee, Donald Trump, it is more conservative than the 2012 platform. It's more conservative than the 2008 platform. It's more conservative than the platforms under which George W. Bush ran for president of the United States. So if you are a constitutional conservative, whether it's an economic conservative, a social conservative, or a safety conservative, a national security conservative, you will be abundantly pleased, I think, as I am, as certainly someone who is a full-fledged and unapologetic Reagan conservative, in terms of the principles that are embraced by the Republican Party. And that will be formally adopted as the vision for America of the grand old party next year. It's been an incredible lineup, and we have a great show ready for you. We're going to be bringing on three of the leaders of the Republican Party who are going to give their perspectives on the issues that that are being tackled, both in the platform, but also what's going on in the news. I mean, what we are dealing with our family, with our faith, with our freedom. And we're going to be diving into that through the rest of the hour. And then at the end, towards the end of the show, I want to be taking your calls. We're going to set aside almost a third of this show to let you, the American people, speak out. There's about a million of your fellow citizens listening in, including those in public office, those in positions of influence. You know, they're all gathering in this town right now. So as you hear these perspectives, I want to hear what you think. Make sure you're calling in and telling us. We'll be opening up those phone lines later. And I know that many times people might feel a little nervous about calling in if they're expressing a different view. I want you to know your views are welcome and respected here. In fact, as much as I like to hear people agree with me, you can ask my wife, I'd like to hear people agree with me. I think it's even more important if you disagree. These are important things. I mean, we are in a democratic republic here. We have the right and the obligation to be able to engage each other, to discuss these things, and as a self-governing people, to be able to open up these ideas and to have an honest and civil discourse. Folks, that's the only way we're going to make it. That's the only way under God that we're going to flourish as a democracy. There are issues that are really dividing us these days. And I think that part of it is because part of it, not all, but part of it is because of a lack of a robust debate. In fact, there are those out there who are demonizing those who disagree with them, that their solution, if they disagree with you, is to call you a hater, call you a hate monger, say that you're trying to scare people. And in doing so, to try and silence debate. And the opposite is what we need. As the Supreme Court said in 2010 in its Citizens United decision, a wonderful decision about free speech, the Supreme Court held that the solution to speech that you disagree with is more speech on both sides, not to shut down debate. And we're going to be talking about those issues right now with our first guest. Joining us is your normal host in this hour, the president of the Family Research Council, the Honorable Tony Perkins. Tony, welcome back to your own show.
Well, thanks, Ken. Great to be with you. I'm not accustomed to calling in, but I made it through to the switchboard. Want to say thanks you for hosting again as we're up here in Cleveland. I just stepped out of the Council for National Policy meeting, which you also participated in today. That's one of the other hats I wear. I serve as president of that organization. But a lot going on here in Cleveland. In fact, let me just mention I'll be on Hannity on his show tonight on Fox, talking about the platform and the potential BP pick that is beginning to circulate from the media regarding who Donald Trump's going to pick as his running mate.
Now, what is your bottom line takeaway? I know it's come up in different ways and fashions with me and with our different guests over the week, but I'd like to get your thoughts. I mean, what are you going to tell Sean? What's your bottom line takeaway regarding the Republican Party platform since you served as a delegate on the platform committee and were one of the men and women who were engaged in crafting this document?
Well, as kind of the dust has settled through the process and others have taken a chance to look at it, those that have a longer track record, or maybe I should say a broader framework in which to look at it, it is clearly the most conservative platform that the Republican Party has put forth. I mean, there are numerous recognitions of religious freedom, but also the acknowledgement that the acknowledgement of the attack that has been systematically launched against religious freedom in the last 7.5 years from the Obama administration. I mean, strong language about marriage and what it is, the union of one man and one woman, and the essential nature of that relationship, that it is the cornerstone of the very foundation of our society. Therefore, we must work to protect it and uphold it. And it calls out the Supreme Court and their activist decisions, including the case in which they redefined marriage, and it calls on calls for a constitutional amendment to address that issue. So very strong on all of the issues. In life, the issue of life throughout the document, in several sections, there's six sections, so life comes up in about three of those sections, and it, in fact, for the first time, calls out Planned Parenthood for the defunding of Planned Parenthood for their participation in the trafficking of human body parts.
And Tony, and that's an issue where the poll numbers are so overwhelming. I mean, every year Americans become increasingly pro-life thanks to 4D ultrasounds and whatnot. People are able to say, look, you know, who am I going to believe, Planned Parenthood? You are my lying eyes. I am looking at a baby turning around in this womb right in front of me. But even though the country is becoming more pro-life, it's even more lopsided to say, hey, even if you think there is that abortion should be legal or there is a right to abortion, very few Americans believe that you have the right to demand that someone, some taxpayer, has to pay for abortion, especially right. if they object to it. Now, as we're talking about these issues, we're talking about overwhelming majorities, that there was still some sort of talk about a few troublemakers and something of a minority report that was being circulated. What can you tell us about that? You can explain it better than I can. Unpack that quickly for our listeners.
I will. Let me go back just a moment and read, actually, from the platform. This is a draft. It's not yet been adopted. It'll be adopted next week by the full convention. But here's what, because I want to read this, Kent, because there have been those in the press that have said that they're backing away from marriage. But here's what it says. We do not accept the Supreme Court's redefinition of marriage, and we urge its reversal, whether through judicial reconsideration or a constitutional amendment returning control over marriage to the states. Doesn't sound wishy-washy to me. Sounds like
not at all. I mean, that's what happens if you overrule Roe v. Wade. That means there's no federal constitutional right to abortion, which means then there's nothing in the Constitution about abortion, which means that under the 10th Amendment that the states can regulate or ban abortion the way that they could for centuries before Roe v. Wade came about.
Yeah. And to your question, there was an effort to undermine this platform by doing what's called a minority report, which would have to be reported on the floor of the convention, which would open this whole thing up for debate. There were about maybe 5-6 delegates of 112 that were either a part of or sympathetic to the LGBT agenda. They, using deception, they went to members and said, hey, sign on to this this sheet, which would call for a vote on inserting a preamble, and that preamble was the 1860 Republican platform. They wanted to have a motion to make that as the preamble. That's what they told people. Well, it was kind of bait and switch. They got about 37 signatures on that because it was a two-page platform. Well, then they said they were going to make it a minority report to replace the entire platform, which would have thrown it into the convention next week. When people found out what they were doing, they quickly began pulling their names off, and I think they're down to about 6 or 7 people who are pushing that, far short of the, I think, 27 or 28 votes that they need to actually do that. So the platform is on its way to be finalized by the full convention. Again, one of the most conservative platforms that the Republican Party has ever had.
Well, Tony, in the just 1 minute that we have left here, in terms of the kind of legislation that would embody these principles, one thing that I heard about recently was the Conscience Protection Act. And we just have a few seconds left. I would love to for you to give the bottom line on that proposed legislation to our listeners.
Well, the platform called for it. It's basically Thomas Jefferson, government should not violate the conscience of Americans. That was a principle put forth in the platform. And yesterday, Congress, the House of Representatives, in a bipartisan vote, 3 Democrats joined, they voted to advance the Conscience Protection Act, which would prohibit the government from penalizing individuals or from trampling upon their beliefs over the issue of abortion.
Folks, we've been talking with Tony Perkins, president of the Family Research Council and the Council for National Policy, your normal host here. Tony, I know you've got a lot to do. Get back with it. Folks, we're with another special guest after the break.
People always ask me, what all do you see in Washington, D.C. when you go on your spiritual heritage tour? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. I guess the better question is, what don't we see when we go to our nation's capital on our spiritual heritage tour? We're going to be going in September the 14th through the 17th. The Capitol, all the monuments, the Arlington National Cemetery, the National Archives, the Library of Congress, the Supreme Court. We're even going to George Washington's Mount Vernon on Saturday. So it's going to be a great time in our nation's capital. One of the best aspects of this is we get to spend time together with brothers and sisters from across the country. So if you want more information on our tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our Williamsburg, Jamestown, Yorktown trip, either one of those or both of those, you can go to spiritualheritagetours.com. spiritualheritagetours.com.
This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson. As I left the Donald Trump meeting in New York City recently, I prayed a brief prayer that the Lord would send me a cab driver that I could minister to. My driver was from Bangladesh. He said, "See this? This cell phone has changed my life. I can listen to things and learn." He made it clear to me that he had read the Bible and the Quran many times. I asked, "So what about God? What do you think about where the Bible says that all have sinned and fallen short of the glory of God?" He stopped for a moment and said, "That's why I say I'm seeking. It might very well be your words one day that I'm reminded by, and I bow my knee to your God." The time was short. The taxicab door closed. The cell phone, the Quran, the Bible, the personal sharing of God's word. May God be gracious to this New York City cab driver as he was to me once upon a time when I was seeking and hardly knew it. This is a Decency Minute. I'm Bill Johnson.
So 10 years ago, Katrina hits the Gulf Coast, and my dad and I thought it'd be cool to go and help somebody and start sharing that passion, that vision that God laid on our hearts. And shortly thereafter, American Family Radio was telling the nation about what God was doing through 8 Days of Hope. And that trip that was meant to be 5, 6, 7, 8 people was 684 people in December of 2005. We rebuilt 84 homes, and we were just so excited about what God was doing. Since then, 1,700 homes have been built, rebuilt across the country. We have taken 17,000 volunteers, hundreds and hundreds of lives changed forever, because they've given their hearts to Jesus, either serving on a missions trip or because they were a homeowner that we were serving during 8 Days of Hope. And now a new ministry, Hope Reigns, is sprung out of this ministry called 8 Days of Hope. Go to our website, 8daysofhope.com.
We're back, America. This is Ken Klukowski, guest hosting Washington Watch, as we are coming to you live, not from Washington, our usual studio in the Federal City, also called historically the cesspool on the Potomac. And let me tell you, that is metaphorically true, if not literally true anymore. But instead, the state of Cleveland, which will be the focus not just of the eyes of the nation, but the eyes of the world over this next week, as America is the sole superpower on earth, and who we choose to be the next president of the United States and our commander-in-chief has impacts for roughly 7 billion human beings on planet Earth for generations. And so everyone's going to be watching us next week, and that's where we already are. We're in position, we're ready to go. And to give us perspective on that is one of the most famous Ohioans in the United States, a distinguished citizen of the Buckeye State, indeed someone who served for something along the lines of a dozen years in statewide office in this great state. Ken Blackwell is the former mayor of Cincinnati, the Queen City, also here in Ohio, the opposite corner of the state. Served in a number of Senate-confirmed presidential positions, such as the U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, but also served as the elected statewide state treasurer of Ohio and for 8 years as Ohio's Secretary of State, including being at ground zero in 2004 when George W. Bush defeated John Kerry for a second term in the White House. No small part of the credit to that in terms of how smoothly and effectively that election went off in this state is due to our next host, who is also Senior Fellow for Human Rights and Constitutional Governance at the Family Research Council, Ken Blackwell. Ken, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Ken, good to be with you. It's good to have you and the FRC team here in the Buckeye State. This is a very, very important time for not only Republicans, but for Americans. And our country. Look, Donald Trump has to do about three important things. One, he has to be a constructive contributor to establishing a Republican platform. He has to choose a running mate. And I think he has to send a salient message to the world as to the way he would lead us in his presentation before the American people, when he's going to have one of the largest audiences ever. And thanks to his team, our team at FRC, and 112 or so Republicans who constructed, I think, the most conservative, the clearest, most succinct Republican Party platform in the party's history. That's done. He, in the next 24 hours, he's going to choose his he's going to announce his running mate, and then all lights will be on him to see what sort of leader and leadership he projects.
Now, as you said, we're going to have a huge announcement tomorrow morning. The candidate himself told us that it looked like he was looking at four individuals, and Governor Chris Christie of New Jersey, Senator Jeff Sessions of Alabama, Governor Mike Pence of Indiana, and former Speaker of the House Newt Gingrich. It seems like each of them, I think, would bring very different things to the ticket. And this is a huge decision, isn't it? I mean, this is going to be – is there any decision that a presidential candidate makes that is more significant before he assumes office than his choice of a running mate?
I don't think so. It tells us a lot about, one, his ability to take the measure of a person. It tells us a lot about the importance that he places in understanding the nature of the job that he or she is getting ready to, you know, assume, because he or she then has to pick somebody who they believe could assume that position if something untoward would happen to him or her. And so it is a very major signal. And as you mentioned, there's been a short list of folks of a variety of skills, talents, and interesting histories. And I think of that four that you mentioned, we have three proven conservatives. And that suggests to me that Donald Trump understands it is so important that he picks a conservative, he picks somebody who understands the essence of American exceptionalism. And as you and I have discussed before, that he picks someone who understands the importance of constitutional governance, who sees the direct line between putting a harness on the power and reach of government and individual liberty, at a time when we are crying out for a leader who will not try to run God and faith out of the public square. It's going to be important that not only that Trump shows us he understands the essence of the challenge by picking somebody to be a running mate, but that he's able to articulate a vision that would once again put the harness back on government and operate on the premise that free men and free women operating in free markets under God's grace can accomplish anything.
Well, I am not going to ask you, Ken Blackwell, to make a prediction at this point. We're all going to find out soon enough. I do want to have you on after the selection is made so that you can give us your thoughts and your reaction on the proposed number two person to lead the Republican Party over the next 4 years. As you said, a person who's just going to be one heartbeat away from the presidency. We've got only 30 seconds left. I would like your take on all of us from around the country. We are here in your home state right now. What should we be checking out here in Cleveland? What do we need to know as the country's eyes come to this great city?
Understands that there hasn't been a Republican to win the White House without caring of Ohio. So just look at the character of the people of Ohio, and you'll know why.
We've been talking with Ken Blackwell, one of just an institution here in the state of Ohio and an expert on presidential politics. Ken, thanks for being with us. We're back right after the break.
Making the most of your money, here's Dan Celia.
All right, it's time for a little bit of a reality check and just to keep everybody abreast of what is going on. So every week, Bank of America Merrill Lynch puts out a flows, inflows, outflows of equities, bonds, other mutual funds. And we look at that. I try to look at that every week. Obviously, since I've been away a little bit and I've been out of the country, I didn't really look at it until yesterday. And I took a long, hard look at it on my way home from Israel. And I noticed that the outflow numbers into equity funds is astronomical. As a matter of fact, globally, it was $133 billion last week. This is as of Friday. And $80 billion of that has been pulled from just U.S. equity funds. Well, wait a minute. So then tell me why, this is what you're all asking, is the market going up? The market is going up because primarily of central banks. Central banks who have no regard for the underlying economic fundamentals of the markets are gobbling up stocks. Yes, central banks. So look, here's the deal. It doesn't matter if $80 billion come out, if $90 billion, or whatever the number is going in from central banks. That makes the breadth of the market positive. So what we have been witnessing is, once again, the false positive of central banks, central bankers creating this around the globe.
Want to hear more financial advice from Dan Celia? Then look for his podcast when you visit the website afr.net.
And we're back, America. This is Ken Klukowski coming to you live from Cleveland, Ohio, where the eyes of the nation will be fixed for the next several days as Donald Trump and a soon-to-be-named vice presidential running mate make their case to the American people and promise a very different vision from what has been the case for government over the past 8 years with Barack Obama, and will be, I think, stark contrast, a radical contrast from what Hillary Clinton is going to promise to give us for another 4 years. But we're going to switch gears a little bit, having gotten perspective from Tony Perkins and Ken Blackwell on those things. Going to bring in now a colleague of mine, the president and CEO of First Liberty Institute, Kelly Shackelford. First Liberty being the largest law firm in the United States exclusively dedicated to protecting religious liberty for all Americans. As I say every time I'm at this microphone, check out what we're doing fighting for your faith and your freedom, that of you and your family, at firstliberty.org. And the captain of that team, our CEO, Kelly Shackelford, joins us now. Kelly, welcome to Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Ken.
It's I would love your perspective, Kelly. It's of course, you're a religious liberty lawyer. You head a legal organization that exclusively is dedicated to advancing religious liberty. What is your take and what are your expectations as you're here in Cleveland? As again, the eyes of the nation are now being directed to the shores of the Great Lakes here in the northeast corner of the state.
Well, I think, you know, I'm like probably a lot of, you know, evangelical Christians or conservative type folks who probably were riding a different horse, trying to, you know, whether it's Ted Cruz or, you know, you name it. And Donald Trump probably wasn't, you know, at the top of any of our list. And, you know, everybody I know has some concerns about Donald Trump. But they're looking and they're going, well, Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton? And it becomes a lot easier for people because they start to look at, well, what's going to happen? What does America look like policy-wise in specific positions? And, of course, from my point, as a standpoint, as a guy who focuses on religious liberty, I want to know about the courts, because we've got a split court right now at the Supreme Court, and the next president is probably going to appoint, I'm going to guess, 3 Supreme Court justices. And
that sounds about right to me.
And so that
go ahead, Kelly. Yes,
20 years.
Well, and that's important, isn't it? This isn't about just about the next 4 years. As much as can happen in 4 years, the Supreme Court could be the next 20 years or the next 40 years. I mean, precedents that will be set by that court will dictate part of the course of this nation for generations.
I think that's right. I think I hear some of these people that say, you know, well, I'm just not going to vote, or I'm not going to vote for Trump, or all this, and they're conservative. And because Trump's not a conservative, he's not as conservative as they would like. And I certainly understand. I think, most people probably that are saying they're going to vote for Trump are people that he wouldn't have been their first or second or third choice. But on the courts, this idea of sitting out an election, I think you're sitting out the next 5 elections if you sit out this election. Because, let me put it this way. Justice Scalia was chosen when, I bet you the average listener, I mean, let's say, I don't know that your exact age, Ken. I'm going to guess you were in, grade school or something when Scalia was chosen. Or if
I was. I was. It was 1986, and I was in grade school at the time.
And so I bet a lot of the listeners are the same way. So think about this. These next justices, it could be that long until there's a chance to change the court again. And we're talking about every issue you care about. We're talking about sanctity of life, which we just saw the decision on that just recently, right? We're talking about religious freedom.
Right.
There was just a big cert denial on that where the sirens
yes.
went off huge. We're talking about the Second Amendment.
Where Justice Samuel Alito, who voted to take the case, started out a dissent by saying that this is an ominous sign that the current court was unwilling to take up such an important religious liberty case.
That's right. And so I would just say this one thing, because I don't think people think about this, but what Donald Trump has said over and over again is he has said that if he is president, he will pick the justices and the judges, these are lifetime appointments, by relying upon the Federalist Society and the Heritage Foundation. Now, if that's true, and he said that over and over again, and the first list he released on who would replace Scalia, he would choose from that list, came from the Federalist Society. Everybody knows that.
Right.
If that's what he really did, this is kind of crazy sounding, right? But he would be the most conservative appointer of federal judges in the history of the country, which is a
that's absolutely time. Right. A conservative president can nominate a liberal justice, and also a president who is not a rock-rib conservative can give us someone like Clarence Thomas, can give us
a right.
George H.W. Bush was a more moderate president, and he gave us our single most conservative member on the court, a true originalist, Clarence Thomas. Kelly, we've only got 30 seconds left. 10 seconds takeaway. We're not going to get into VP predictions here, but I would imagine that you would think that if Donald Trump picks a conservative tomorrow morning for vice president, that could also do great good for his ticket. We've got 5 seconds, a quick reaction.
Absolutely it would, and it's obviously Mike Pence is a choice, very conservative on across the board.
What does it mean to be equal? According to the dictionary, equal means the same for each person. Last year, the so-called Equality Act was introduced in Congress by adding sexual orientation and gender identity as protected categories under federal civil rights law. This act would give special perks to some people just because they identify as homosexual or transgender. It's important to remember that many bills introduced in Congress have positive-sounding titles that hide their true agendas. The Equality Act is a perfect example. This bill puts people who live out their faith on unequal footing under the law. It imposes sexual orientation and gender identity provisions on religious schools and universities, rejects the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, and so much more. FRC's new publication on this legislation is a brief summary of the dangers this bill poses towards those who hold a biblical view of marriage and the family. Visit frc.org/equalityact to learn more.
Hi, this is Kirby Anderson. Let me ask you a question. Have Christians been a good steward of the vote? Consider these statistics from the 2012 presidential election. First, there were 13 million born-again Christians who were not registered to vote. Second, there were an additional 26 million who were registered to vote who did not vote. I encourage you to make sure that people in your sphere of influence are registered to vote and then educate them about the issues and the candidates. Don't sit on the sidelines. Get involved in election 2016.
Consider serving the Lord with friendships. It's an opportunity to reach out to the needy around the world. They're now taking applications to volunteer, and they need help in the areas of mechanics, maritime, including deck, engine, and steward departments, food service, warehousing, and office. Check it out at friendships.org or call 337-433-5022.
Who says you can't have your cake and eat it too? If you're like a lot of people, you would like to support the culture-changing efforts of the American Family Association. But there's the very pressing reality that your income must meet your current needs as well as act as seed for future income, either for the short term or for life. A charitable gift annuity might be your answer. A charitable gift annuity offers a unique method for both planning ahead for permanent income and supporting the work of the American Family Association. An AFA Foundation representative will walk you through the details of creating a charitable gift annuity, allowing you to decide if a charitable gift annuity is right for your individual financial situation. Connect with us today by calling 800-326-4543, extension 345, or visit us online at afafoundation.net.
And we're back for the rest of the hour, folks. I'm Ken Klukowski sitting in for Washington Watch with you live in Cleveland, Ohio, and we are opening up the phone lines to hear your thoughts on what you've been hearing this hour about faith, family, freedom, and the future of this country. We're taking your calls now at 866-372-7234. Again, 866-372-7234. We want to know what you were thinking. You've heard three social conservative leaders of the Republican Party, their thoughts, their reactions. They're all here on the ground in Cleveland, have seen these events unfolding. Maybe you agree with them, maybe you don't. Especially if you don't agree. I want to hear from you either way. But if you disagree with anything that you've heard, if you've got something where you want to sound off, I will give you that sounding board. Bring the fire as long as you're willing to take the fire. Let's see if we can't, between the two of us, discover what the truth of the matter is. So again, that's 866-372-7234. I see the boards are lighting up right now, but there's still room. There's still some open lines for the rest of you to call in. We're going to start off with Becky from Alabama. You're on Washington Watch. And I'm told the technicians are connecting back here. Folks, welcome to live radio. I mean, we are here in the beautiful city of Cleveland outside our normal studio, and it is a technological miracle the way that these technical people from all over the country are able to connect us in remote locations so that we can be here on the shores of the lake, right by the convention center, and be able to bring you live the action as it's happening. Do we have Becky now?
Yes.
Becky, welcome to Washington Watch.
Yes. And listening to these men today, I do agree with them, you know, everything they're saying and what the Republican Party's standing for, but I also see a fallacy in it, in that, you know, I've had a lot of miracles happen in my life in the last 5.5 years. I mean, really major miracles. And the Lord is showing me, he's saying, you know, he doesn't want my opinion. He said, Becky, it doesn't matter what you think. All that matters is what I think. And I think that, you know, we all need to understand that it's really not our opinion, it's his. And that's the most important thing. And if these men are keyed into him and getting his opinion first, but he is an awesome, wonderful, I mean, he is a beautiful, gracious God.
Well, amen to that. And Becky, I agree with everything that you're saying. And from the hand of that loving God, we all get what Paul says in Acts 17. He says, life in breath in everything else. Part of that everything else, if you're a citizen of the United States, is your right and your duty to vote. That a choice is put before us that God chose not to give us a king. He chose not to give us a form of hereditary government where the powers of government just naturally pass from one person to the eldest son or some other successor. That God, in his wisdom, chose to put us in a country where every several years we get to gather together and decide who shall lead us, who shall have a hand in making the laws under which we shall live, what kind of a people should we be. And in that regard, I hope you would agree with me that people need to be fully engaged and working in striving to make good use of those freedoms that God has given us to try and pick the best leader. Evidently, my words were so profound that they blew Becky right off the phone. Becky, thank you for joining us. Turning now to Nelson from Texas. Nelson, you're on Washington Watch.
How are you doing? How are you doing? Thank you for having me on the show.
Absolutely.
On my way to work. I feel privileged to have the opportunity to say so. I think right now, I haven't heard to the programs that I've been working, but this morning they were debating Gingrich and another individual. Very conservative guy. I think the best thing is to have a VP, a very conservative VP, to help Mr. Trump's possibility of getting elected president. You certainly don't want Hillary.
I agree with you 100% on that, Nelson. I think that Donald Trump will do himself a world of good, tremendous good, by picking a conservative VP. Before I let you go, tell me, so you think that's Gingrich? Well, what do you think about the other choices out there? I think everyone knows that Chris Christie is not thought of as a conservative, but what about Mike Pence and Jeff Sessions?
Yeah, I think Mike would do a good choice for him.
All right. Well, Nelson, thanks for joining us. We'll find out tomorrow morning who it's going to be. I hope all of you tune in along with me. Turning now to Perry from Illinois. Perry, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you. I got a kind of a statement on Donald Trump and a question.
Just make sure you fire it off to me fast because we have a lot of callers waiting to speak. Go right ahead.
My first choice was Ben Carson, but I never did dislike Donald Trump. But I have noticed about him, you know, even though he ruffles people's feathers and everything, he isn't going by anybody's speech. You're actually getting to see what he thinks and feels. I really think he's an honest person. His record with business shows he's got to be intelligent. And he's actually said, you know, he's going to pick the people that's better than him to do the different positions. So that's, you know, you don't have to know everything about everything.
Oh, I think there's no question at all that people know when they're listening to Donald Trump that there's not much of a filter there. He's telling you what he thinks, and there's a real feel of authenticity about that. I think it probably drives some of his advisors nuts sometimes because politicians are usually so polished and tightly scripted. What's your question, Perry?
The question is on a different issue, on the Hillary Clinton thing. I know if I would have divulge information like that, makes sense, you know, some of us probably did get perceived in some dangerous areas and stuff. And I'm just a truck driver. If I would have had that kind of information divulged, I would have probably been executed. Is there any way that they'll be able to power switch hands? Because I imagine Obama would just exonerate her.
Oh, great question. For some things, yes, you have what's called the statute of limitations. That's the time frame in which a prosecution can be brought, or not just for criminal, but for civil stuff too. It's the time frame where you can bring a lawsuit for something where you think your rights were violated. For many of these crimes, I believe it should be 2 years. Now, so that means that some of the things that Hillary Clinton did several years ago, the statute of limitations might be expired there. And again, I haven't looked those up in the law book, so I'm not completely sure. Many of these crimes are 2 years. However, anything she has said over the past year or so to federal investigators, testifying before Congress, for example, I'll say flat out, I believe Hillary Clinton committed the felony of perjury when she lied knowingly before the U.S. House of Representatives under oath. I believe the statute of limitations for perjury is 2 years. And yes, when a new administration could come in, she could be charged and I believe convicted and incarcerated for perjury. Perry, thanks. Great questions. Appreciate that. And folks, I'm about to turn to a few more callers, but there's still a couple phone lines open. The boards are lighting up, but there's a couple places where the rest of you can call in. So sound off. Join in the conversation at 866-372-7234. 866-372-7234, and we are turning to Tony from California. Tony, you're on Washington Watch.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. And more than a question, I just sort of have a statement. I had been a little depressed lately because I feel like that Hillary is one of the Teflon-coated Clintons. And that anything that goes on her slides off. It has just, you know, and that she's not really held accountable for anything. But I was really enthused and hopeful when I heard that this is a conservative platform. How conservative this platform is.
Oh, yes, tremendously. And, I was right there. I was reporting on that for Breitbart News. You can pull up my news reports on that at Breitbart.com. And also, let me also add to that, Tony, that I was also asked between the four different potential VPs who were being looked at, the editors, my fellow editors at Breitbart asked me to do a profile on one of them in particular. They assigned to me Mike Pence. And so I have a comprehensive look, a 3,000-word look on the lives and positions of Mike Pence and what he would bring to a ticket if he ends up being Donald Trump's pick for vice president. We'll find out tomorrow. So everyone, please check that out. It's what the lead story is at the top right now at Breitbart.com. But yes, Tony, it's to respond to your comment. This is the most conservative Republican platform in at least a generation in modern history, if not perhaps ever. And if you're a constitutional conservative, and it sounds like you are, I think you'll be absolutely thrilled to see that document that gets unveiled on Monday. Thank you, Tony. Turning now to Rich from Texas. Rich from Texas, you're on Washington Watch.
Hey, thanks for the call. I've got a question for you. I appreciate all this hard work and the talk on the conservative platform and all the, you know, it supposedly is the greatest since ever. But the question that I've got is, you've got this body developing it, and here it is, you got Trump. Is this ever run by Trump and say, hey, where are you with all this stuff, or where does that rubber meet the road?
Good question. It happens twice, Rich. First, before the delegates get it, party staffers put together that they start with the platform from 4 years ago. And then they go through every paragraph of it, seeing if anything was time sensitive, that it's no longer even an issue, updating for new issues that have arisen in the life of our country over the past 4 years. And as they're doing that, the policy analysts and the lawyers, they are in consultation and talks with the candidate during that time, with the candidate's people. And so it's so that there is a degree of communication there. And all of that input happens. And then it goes to the delegates, and the delegates work their will. Then on Monday, the full Republican National Convention will vote on whether to accept or modify that agreement. I think you're going to see them overwhelmingly accept it. And then it is after that formally presented to the presumptive nominee for his approval. And I so keep your eyes on that. I expect you're going to be pleased in terms of seeing Donald Trump's reaction to this very staunchly constitutional conservative platform next week. Great question, Rich. I'm so glad you asked that. We're turning now to Ernest from Ohio. Ernest, thank you for having us in your state.
Thank you. Thank you. But I'm from Mississippi. I'm working here in Ohio today.
Very good. Well, Ernest, thank you for visiting along with us in Ohio. What can I do for you? You're on Washington Watch.
Yeah, but I am really angry at Christians here in this country.
Okay. Why? I am one of those. Why are you angry at me, Ernest?
Let me preface that statement by this. When I read in my Bible, Jesus said, give to Caesar what's Caesar's and give to God what's God's.
Yes.
And for the last 30 years, Christians in this country have spent billions of dollars on elected politicians. And we haven't got a darn penny for our money. You know, I've set up and counted up the money we have donated. We could have built 50 clinics in this country, in each state. The Christians could have had 50 parent planhood clinics in this country. We could have had our preachers to preach about abortions in church, and we go out to the people.
Well, let me go. Sure, I hear what you're saying, Ernest. Let me go ahead and push back on that a bit. And I appreciate you expressing a view to get a reaction. I think that's wonderful. What if it became illegal to build a church? What if it became illegal for you to preach? What if it became illegal for you to share the gospel of Jesus Christ with another human being? You know, those things are all protected by the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States. Those matters go before the U.S. Supreme Court. What if you had a majority on the court who were radical anti-Christian secularists who said that the First Amendment did not protect your right to read the Bible or to share it with others or to gather together in church? Folks, let me tell you, I've been, Ernest and the rest of you, I've been to 26 nations around the earth. I've been to every inhabited continent on earth. I've been to countries where it is not legal to share the gospel. Now, of course, Christians will do it anyways, but in doing so, they understand they can be arrested, they can be tortured, they can be thrown in prison. I have spoken with fellow believers who have suffered in that regard for it. It's because in this country, some of the elected officials that we've had, and then the judges and Supreme Court justices that they've given us, that is the means that God has used to spare us from such persecution now. And I would encourage all of you, be engaged. Sure, we are. Never put your trust in princes. But folks, if God puts you in a self-governing country, then get about governing yourselves and making sure that we have the right leaders. Folks, that's all the time we're going to have here on Washington Watch today. My thanks to all of our guests and callers. Again, I've been Ken Klukowski, Senior Counsel at First Liberty Institute. Check out what we're doing for you at firstliberty.org. Also, Senior Legal Editor at Breitbart News Network. Check out Breitbart.com right now for breaking news, including a profile on a possible vice presidential pick. See you tomorrow.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.